It's 108 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live from my living room in Palm Springs, California. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, the local news is pulling out all the stops to keep you afraid of the Rona. KTLA's latest headline, L.A. County's coronavirus test positivity rate spikes nearly 700% in 1 month as Delta variant circulates.
But it is Woo Wednesday.
It is Woo Wednesday.
It's Woo Wednesday. Yeah, baby. Woo, 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 woo. Woo, 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 woo. Woo, 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 woo. Woo, woo.
800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. She is a trauma surgeon, an expert on mass casualties, former chief medical officer for Harris, who you can follow on Twitter at Dr. Kelly Victory. Dr. Kelly Victory, welcome.
Hey, happy Wuhan Wednesday, John. I hate to say it, thank you. I hate to say it, but they are really winning on this. They are continuing this fear-mongering about the Delta variant. They're continuing to push the vaccination efforts. They're continuing to promote the concepts of lockdown and social distancing and masks and those sorts of things. And unfortunately, as much work as you and I put into it and others trying to get the more balanced approach and get a more reasonable set of data points out there, the mainstream media and the powers that be in government, local and federal, seem to be winning on this because people remain unjustifiably fearful of the Delta variant, and they are trusting far, far, far too much in what the government is selling.
I'd like you to put your chief medical officer hat on for a second to talk about this, because I would imagine when you are the chief medical officer for an airline or a hotel or casino, and there's the SARS outbreak or whatever the case may be, you want your customers to do certain things to ensure that your airplane, your hotel, your casinos are safe. And you probably try to coerce them into certain activities by posting signs, by using carrots and not sticks, that sort of thing. Getting information out there so everyone knows what will keep them safe and not put them at risk for whatever virus is out there. What I've been seeing of late is that public health officials and politicians have turned to insulting people who aren't doing what they want them to do, where they degrade them, they attack them, they tell them they're stupid, they tell them they're selfish. And I don't understand for the life of me how they expect to convert anyone with those attitudes. I want to play some sound for you of LA County Supervisor Louie Anderson, going after the people of Los Angeles County.
I really want to continue to express a prayer to all of those who are not vaccinated to understand the impact that they have, not only on their communities and their families, but on other people in their communities who are the healthcare workers, who are the people toiling more than 14, 15, 16 hours a day to take care of them when they don't want to take care of themselves. And I'm sorry to sound a little angry, but it just strikes me as enormously selfish. We can't rely on herd immunity if the herd won't get their shots.
Dr. Kelly, would you ever insult your customers as chief medical officer if they didn't do what you wanted them to do?
Absolutely not, because it's a losing proposition, John. We know, if you have any lick of background in psychology, that that's a really bad way to go. If anything, you take people who are potentially on the fence, people who are considering possibly doing something, wondering if they might benefit from getting vaccinated, and people say, you know what? The hell with you. Go to hell. Who are you to insult me? Tell me I'm being selfish. I'm trying to make decisions that are right for me. And let's remember that the concept of informed consent, which is the individual's right to make a decision that is in their best interest, not the best interest of the community, their own individual self-interest. That's what informed consent is about. When you start insulting that and saying, no, John, you shouldn't make the decision about your health care that's best for you. You should take a community outlook at it. We have never in the history of medicine asked people to take personal risk for something to benefit others. And we sure as heck have never done it with children. When you start talking about asking or trying to cajole or guilt children, people under the age of 18, to participate in something in which they incur personal risk for the sort of, you know, amorphous concept of community good, that is absolutely wrong. It defies informed consent. And this type of insulting people, whether they're insulting your intelligence or they're insulting your goodwill or your moral character by saying that you are being selfish if you don't participate, that is going the wrong way. And you are going to tick people off and they're going to dig their heels in.
Let's go through some of the numbers. You sent some numbers to me earlier today, and I want to go through it with you. According to Our World and Data, the proportion of the U.S. population that is fully vaccinated increased from 47.53% on July 10th to 47.74% on July the 13th, for an average rate increase of 0.07% per day. That compares to an average rate of increase around 0.1% to 0.2% per day for June and jumps of 0.8% or more during the campaign's heyday back in March and April when elderly people and people with comorbidities were all getting vaccinated at record clips. The rate of increase for at least one vaccine also appears to be going asymptomatic at just over 55%. It took 3 days to increase from 54.97% on July the 10th to 55.18% on July the 13th, also working out to a 0.07 increase per day. In short, the campaign is flatlining with less than half the population fully vaccinated, and how many among the 55% who got at least one shot are never going to get the second shot. So it looks like, Dr. Kelly, we've hit the ceiling of the population of people who want to be fully vaccinated. Is that how you read these numbers?
Exactly. I put these numbers together and sent them to you because I was pointing out that exact fact. Yes, we have flatlined. The program has flatlined because the people, number one, who are really keen on getting vaccinated with this experimental vaccine have already done so. The people in the highest risk categories, fortunately, have already done so. Those elderly people and people with well-known comorbidities who are even contemplating whether or not a vaccine would be good for them have already done so. The people over the age of 70, for example, you know, we're upwards of 80% of those folks have been vaccinated. But people who are not in those risk categories and people who have some concerns about the vaccine have really put the brakes on. And all that's happening with these efforts to insult people, to call them selfish, to threaten them that if they don't do, you know, get a vaccine, they're not going to be able to, you know, insert whatever, go on a cruise, fly on a plane, go to school, attend a concert, whatever. That is backfiring because the more you push on something where people have a question about it, the more they start to question it. And honestly, they start saying, wait a minute, if this is such an awesome thing, why are you trying so hard to sell it? If this is such a fabulous vaccine, how come people who are vaccinated are coming down with the Delta variant where people who had COVID before aren't? People are starting to get that. So absolutely, the program itself has come to a screeching halt because there is no more demand, and there's a heck of a lot of vaccine out there that's about to be thrown out because it's going to expire. So what I can anticipate and what I will predict you'll see next is that they will start to apply the thumb screws to the one group where they really have significant leverage, and tragically, that is people under the age of 18, because they can hold out the one thing that really, really matters to people, and it's the ability to go to school.
Which they've done for over a year now in certain school districts, including LAUSD.
Yes, and so what they will do is they will say, if you want to go back to school, we've now made people so miserable, so frantic, so frustrated, so depressed, so socially isolated. And now they have leverage because they could say, want to go back to school? If you want to go back to school, roll up your sleeve. And again, I will say I am very pro-vaccine, John. I've spent much of my career promoting vaccination, trying to educate people about the importance of childhood vaccinations in particular. But these COVID-19 vaccines are experimental. They are not FDA approved. We have a tremendous amount we don't know about them. And on top of that, you are talking about a group of people, people under the age of 18, who have essentially a zero risk of having any bad outcome from COVID itself. So I think the idea that they are doubling down on their efforts to force those people to get vaccinated so that they can get their overall vaccination numbers up over 50% of the population, I think is unconscionable. I think it's immoral. It's unethical. And it's really bad public health policy.
Let's talk about another population of people, because in my own personal life, the people I know who are most likely not going to want to get the vaccine or don't want to get the vaccine are people who have already had COVID-19 and recovered from it and provably have the antibodies. You could give them a T-cell immunity test. You could give them an antibody test in the months after they contracted it. They verifiably all had COVID-19. Their attitude is this: I have the antibodies. I have better antibodies than are available through the vaccine. Why should I assume the risk of taking the vaccine when I don't need it? And it seems to me like we have this administrative bean counter attitude where they just want to get the numbers up, and the immunity or the protection for society is not the objective. It's just getting the number up above a certain number so that they can turn to their constituents or they can turn to their bosses in elected office and say, see, we got it above 85% or 90% or whatever the number happens to be. But you don't necessarily need to get the number there if you count people who have immunity naturally. But they're really going after that population.
Oh, absolutely. And not only do those people, meaning COVID recovered people, submit themselves to, quote, some risk from the vaccine, they have greater than average risk. We know now, after having months of data on this, we know that the people who are more likely than others to have an adverse event, an adverse reaction to the vaccines, are people who had and recovered from COVID. There's no doubt about that. They have a higher risk of all things, including blood clots, neurologic complications, allergic reactions, and everything in between. It's not to say that people who haven't had COVID don't bear that risk, but COVID-recovered people have a higher than average risk from the vaccines themselves, and they stand to benefit absolutely nothing, zero. There's not one study that shows that a COVID-recovered individual stands to benefit in any way from a COVID-19 vaccine. They only have the potential for risk. The Cleveland Clinic, very, very liberal institution, by the way, I worked there for many years, very liberal. They came out, they did the study and said, turns out COVID-recovered people have great immunity and do not need a vaccine. But you're exactly right. They're pushing, saying those people need to be vaccinated. Throughout time, since we have understood immunology and immunity at all, herd immunity has always, until November of last year, was always defined as being comprised of two components. Number one, people who got immunized to a particular thing. And number two, people who already had that disease and therefore had immunity. We reach herd immunity, for example, with measles by a combination of people who are vaccinated for measles and people who had measles. Likewise for polio. People who had polio didn't go out and get vaccinated afterwards for polio. They already had it. People who had chickenpox don't go out and get vaccinated for chickenpox. Okay? Herd immunity has two components, the vaccinated and those who had it and recovered. It wasn't until it became politically expedient in November of last year that the WHO and the CDC redefined herd immunity as just being comprised of people who are vaccinated. It's insanity and it's fake science.
If you have a question for Dr. Kelly Victory, give us a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Your call's coming up, but right now it's time to take a look at the road. On the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, we're joined by Dr. Kelly Victory, who's a trauma surgeon and expert on mass casualties, former chief medical officer for Harrah's, who you can follow on Twitter at Dr. Kelly Victory. We're taking your calls right now at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Dr. Kelly, earlier today I sent you an article that was in the Wall Street Journal titled, "Are Latent Viruses Causing Long COVID-19 Symptoms? Patient Groups Push for Testing." What do you make of what the Wall Street Journal found in their article?
Well, I think there's just too much, John, that still requires investigation. Their contention is possibly, you know, that the virus is hanging out. In other words, that people haven't cleared the virus itself. They still have active COVID-19. And it doesn't match up with what clinicians, at least in my experience, are seeing. People don't continue to test positive. They don't have viable virus still in their noses, for example, despite the fact that they have, quote, long COVID symptoms. And I believe that it's far more explicable to say that the symptoms of long COVID, whether it's the fatigue, inflammation, clotting issues, bleeding issues, all of these things, I think are really attributable to the inflammation that persists in the body following that autoimmune response that we see with the cytokine storm. So I guess what I'm saying is I think that it is very, very unlikely that what they are concerned about, that people have ongoing latent virus, is actually what's causing the symptoms of, quote, long COVID.
If you have a question for Dr. Kelly Victory, give us a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Your calls up next, but right now it's time for headlines. It's 1:36 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Ann Coulter joins us at the top of the hour. Right now, we're joined by Dr. Kelly Victory, who you can follow on Twitter at Dr. Kelly Victory, and we're taking your calls at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Let's begin with Dan. Dan, you're on KABC. Hello. All right, let's go to Ken. Ken, you're on KABC. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. As of question, I had a sebaceous cyst behind my ear. It's benign. It was there for the longest time. I don't know, maybe 10 years. Never had a problem. It's about the size of a little marble. Never swelled, never did anything bad. I got the Moderna shot, the second one, and maybe like a week later, the thing swelled up, became infected. I had to get it removed. And a friend of mine sent me a video on Facebook of a doctor saying that the vaccine is great against the virus, but it might suppress certain things and other things that you get. It might take away some of the ways to fight those things. Is that possible? Does that make
sense?
Well,
it's certainly possible. Yeah, it's certainly possible. There's no way to say with any certainty. Sebaceous cysts do get infected over time, and it's sometimes it's just a matter of time until it does. We've seen quite a few cases of things like people having outbreaks of shingles following vaccine. Again, the vaccine itself doesn't, quote, cause shingles. Shingles is caused by a reactivation of the chickenpox virus. But there appears to be in certain people a response when they get the vaccine that it suppresses their immune system such that they are having outbreaks of other things. In your cases, perhaps getting a sebaceous cyst infected, those get infected with bacteria. In other people, it's an outbreak of shingles because their immune system is perhaps depressed for some period of time after getting the vaccine. We're seeing quite a bit of that right now, unfortunately, until we have more time to sort through all the data and see if we're seeing a pattern where it's not just you, it's not just a handful of people, but a lot of people are having this, then there's no way to say with certainty if it's actually related to the vaccine.
Let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hi, I'm extremely grateful for you guys. Thank you very much. I've been taking 200 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine a week and the 30 milligrams of zinc a day for the past 3 months. My three questions. One, I'm traveling to Italy and Israel. What are my chances of going there without being vaccinated? Two, you've recently talked about studies on the positive effects of hydroxychloroquine and zinc. There's been some very recent studies. Where do I find those? And three, what's the T-cell test website? Thank you so much.
With regard to the question about, what's your likelihood of being able to travel to Italy and Israel without being vaccinated, there's no way for me to say. These are up to the guidelines of the international community, whether or not they put in place guidelines that say that you either have to have proof of vaccination or possibly have a recent COVID test. I think the latter is more likely. I am unaware at this point of any country that's absolutely demanding proof of vaccination. At this point, Italy has been relatively open, to my understanding, and hasn't required any of that. I wouldn't be surprised if Israel required a recent COVID test, but you're best to go to the websites and actually look at what their requirements are for customs, and those things should be on the travel websites. With regard to the T cell test, the website to go to is T-detect.com, and you can actually order the blood test yourself. You can print it out then, and you take it to a freestanding laboratory, either like a LabCorp, LabQuest, or a freestanding laboratory at your local hospital, and you can get that done. And it is helpful for people who had and recovered from COVID long enough ago that they no longer have circulating antibodies.
Let's go to Gus. Gus, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, John and Dr. Victory. I'm a little confused. Perhaps you could shed some light on the blood test results. I had a blood test drawn for other reasons, but included on that was he put the antibodies test on there, and it was the nucleocapsid result, and I came back non-reactive. I was vaccinated 5 months ago. So what he did was he being my doctor, he ordered an antibodies test with IgG, and that came back non-reactive. So the next step was I haven't got the results for this yet, but he came back with the antibodies IgG spike test. So I'm totally confused. And maybe you could shed some light on that.
Okay, well, I'm not looking at any of the things that were ordered, but trying to sort through it. It sounds to me like what he's trying to determine is whether or not you mounted an adequate immune response and developed neutralizing antibodies in response to the vaccine. The last test that he ordered, the one you don't have the response to yet, is looking to actually see if you have antibodies specifically to the spike protein. I would have expected the other tests to be positive if you, in fact, had an adequate response to these vaccinations. And the fact that your doctor is even having to order tests to prove whether or not you developed immunity to the vaccines is somewhat problematic, and I think really reflective of the problems we are seeing with these. Most people, once you get vaccinated for something, you don't then need to go to your doctor to see if the vaccine worked. I'm guessing that you didn't do that for chickenpox or hepatitis or measles, mumps, polio, or any of the other things you've been vaccinated for in your life. And this is reflective of the fact that these are entirely experimental vaccines. We don't know yet who develops an adequate immune response, if everybody does, or if there are certain people for whom the vaccine simply isn't effective, and only time will tell. Hopefully that last test for you will come back positive so that you have some degree of confidence that the vaccine that you took actually did some good.
Let's go to Carrie. Carrie, you're on KABC. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Victory. Thank you so much for all your information. Great to hear all your insight. And I think you've actually answered my question, which was people who have had COVID, my whole family had COVID in February, last February, before this virus was known about by the mainstream. And so I feel like we're protected against every variant out there, including Delta. And so that's why we are not getting vaccinated. And that's not talked about, the people who have been sick, except lately. Finally, I've heard some news broadcasters throw the people who have been ill into the numbers for herd immunity in with the vaccinated, like you spoke about earlier.
Well, they absolutely should be part of the contributing factor to herd immunity. The CDC estimates that 6 to 8 times more people have actually had and recovered from COVID than have tested positive. So that puts us well in excess of 200 million Americans, they believe, had and recovered from COVID. And we have every reason to believe that those people have full and broad and lasting immunity to COVID and all of the variants. Practicing physicians, including myself, are not seeing people who had COVID previously come down with reinfection with COVID from any variant, including the Delta variant. Unfortunately, we are seeing quite a few breakthrough cases in fully vaccinated people who are contracting the Delta variant because it's highly contagious. But we are not seeing people like yourself and your family who are COVID recovered contract the virus, and that includes the Delta variant. Fortunately, the Delta variant, although it is somewhat more contagious, more transmissible, has had a much, much less lethal course, far fewer side effects, far fewer complications, and far, far fewer people requiring hospitalization, let alone dying from Delta compared to the previous variant.
If you have a question for Dr. Kelly, give us a call at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. More of your calls coming up, but right now it's time to take a look at the road. On the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Ann Coulter coming up in moments. Right now we're joined by Dr. Kelly Victory, who's taking your calls at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Let's begin with John. John, you're on KABC. Hello.
Yes, Dr. Victory. I was wondering what you think of the idea that children are not vectors for this virus because they just recently, at a young age, have had the measles, mumps, and rubella shots. Do you think that would have something to do with it? And could an adult get that vaccine, being that it's so, well approved?
Yeah, well, we don't know entirely why it is that children, number one, are not at significant risk from COVID, and number two, why it is exactly that they're lousy vectors of it, meaning that they simply don't spread it significantly even when they do get it. It appears that they don't develop high, what we call viral loads, meaning the actual amount of virus that they get in their nose and throats and lungs when they contract COVID simply doesn't seem to be high enough that they spread it significantly. No one's entirely sure why it is. There's some theory that it's because children are exposed to more coronaviruses in general, more common colds and things of that sort, and therefore have underlying immunity that's better. There's some theory that they have better T-cell response to coronaviruses. No one's quite certain why, and it certainly could be, again, because they've had more recent vaccinations for other things, like, as you pointed out, chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella, the routine childhood vaccinations. So although we don't know entirely why they don't get it, why they aren't at risk, and why they're not good vectors, the reality is that that's the reality. We know that from reams of data. This isn't theoretical. This has been borne out in hard, cold data from around the globe over the period of the past 18 months. Unfortunately, rather than celebrating that fact that young, healthy people are at essentially zero risk from this virus, instead, we've got people in public health and elsewhere that are trying to foist an experimental vaccine on people who have zero risk from the disease itself.
Let's go to Lisa. Lisa, you're on KABC. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, John Phillips and Dr. Victory. Thank you for your rationality, big picture, and with a sense of humor. It's a perfect combination. I recently talked to a friend whose 17-year-old son was admitted. He had some blood in the stool, and he's had a couple of years of some kind of IB, you know, irritable bowel problems, but he did have one of the mRNA. I don't know if it's Pfizer or Moderna. And he's 17. He just has had to have an endoscopy and a colonoscopy due to this latest symptom. And I didn't mention it to my friend, but I wondered, could the vaccine have triggered an autoimmune response? Because she said the doctors said that Crohn's disease seems very likely, given his symptoms.
Well, there's no question that we are seeing an uptick in both issues with bleeding following vaccination, both clotting and bleeding itself. We've had, if you look at the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, there's a disproportionate number of adverse reactions related to either clotting or bleeding. And we are, as predicted with these mRNA vaccines, seeing an uptick in adverse events related to autoimmune diseases. Crohn's disease would be only one. My big fear is that we will see a burgeoning of those cases over the months and years to come, as well as other autoimmune issues like multiple sclerosis and those sorts of things, Lou Gehrig's disease, demyelinating issues, partial paralysis. We're seeing some in the immediate time period following vaccination, but I fear we'll see more. Whether I can say with any certainty that that individual, this one 17-year-old, there's no way to say with certainty, and that's why it takes months, if not years, to sort through all of the adverse events following vaccination to determine what was truly causative. I'm hoping that your friend did take the time to have this reported to the VAERS system, however.
Let's go to Sam. Sam, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Victory. I have a question. My wife is in Afghanistan. She's in the Army. She's due to come back to the States by the end of August. And she has not been vaccinated yet. However, she does have the option to get vaccinated after leaving. Once they leave the base and start coming back home. But the thing is that we want to have a child, but I heard yesterday that, and I realize that a lot of this is inconclusive, but that it could affect her fertility. So we were trying to discuss it yesterday, and we still came up with a bunch of more questions and definitely no answers. So I was kind of hoping you could clear the marbles in my head. I mean, just so we could, I really just don't know, I mean, what to advise her to do.
Well, I could tell you, you know, getting vaccinated and certainly taking an experimental vaccine always comes down to a risk-benefit calculation. You need to take into account what your true risk is from the virus itself and weigh that against the potential adverse effects that you may have from the vaccine. There are considerable concerns about impact on fertility for otherwise young, healthy women of childbearing age. We know that there is an overlap. Essentially, there's an identical protein on the spike protein on COVID-19 that is identical to a protein that's required for the formation and development of a placenta. And therefore, if you develop antibodies to the spike protein, you may well be developing antibodies to your own placenta and forcing either the inability to implant and form a placenta or to cause a miscarriage. We're seeing a disproportionate number of miscarriages in the first trimester in women who have received the mRNA vaccines. Unfortunately, pregnant women was one group that these vaccines were never tested on prior to them being launched. Moderna just announced yesterday that they are going to start a trial. They're going to start doing some research on the effects of the vaccine on pregnant women. Seems to me that's something they might wanted to have done before they started injecting pregnant women. But suffice to say, if your wife is otherwise healthy and doesn't have risk factors for COVID-19, and you do want to get pregnant, then I'd really strongly consider waiting on the vaccination.
Let's go to Casey. Casey, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Dr. Victory, for taking my call. In December, my daughter got married. There were 10 of us at the wedding. Unbeknownst to us, my future son-in-law had contracted COVID and unfortunately became extremely ill their wedding night. Everyone got tested positive for the COVID virus. Obviously, we were in close proximity, kissing, hugging, dancing, eating, sharing food together. I am the only one over 25 years old that did not test positive for the virus, nor did I have any symptoms. My question is, I'm more afraid of getting the vaccine than I am in catching the virus. My logic being that if this virus is highly contagious and I was around in close proximity of that many people that actually caught it and tested positive, that my body is probably has the ability to fight it as opposed to getting the vaccine, and just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, it's also possible that you had COVID previously. It's been around now for 18 months, and it's possible that you actually had a case of COVID previously and had relatively mild symptoms, as so many people did. That's the reason why the CDC predicts or estimates that somewhere between 6 and 8 times more people actually had COVID than were ever tested, because many, many people had mild symptoms. It's a mild disease in the vast majority. So it's possible that you already have immunity, or it's possible that your immune system is just working at peak performance and therefore you didn't contract it at this recent event. I would tell people, again, I have a lot of concerns about these vaccines because they're experimental and there are so many unanswered questions, that if you aren't otherwise in a risk category for having a bad outcome from COVID-19, I would think long and hard about getting vaccinated right now. You have to remember that even for healthy people